There is only one thing that you can control in your life. That's your thoughts. You can choose to be happy or you can choose to be miserable. It's just that simple. Join me for the next hour on Law of Attraction Talk Radio, where I hope to inspire you to make the conscious decision to be happy. For that is the exact place where you need to be to create your own magnificent reality. Let us begin now. Well, welcome to Law of Attraction Talk Radio. I'm Jules from beautiful Southern California, and I'm so glad you could be with us because we have a really great show. Tonight, we're talking all about Elvis Presley. We have his stepbrother, David Stanley, with us tonight, and he's going to be giving us all kinds of insights into Elvis, all of his demons, all of his mysticism and spiritualness, a lot of these things that you never even knew about. For instance, did you know that Elvis Presley was a healer? I had no idea. So stay with us because you're going to find out some really fascinating things about our old friend, Elvis Presley. We'll be right back.
NLP tip number one, the meaning of your communication is the response that you get. So if I say something to you that's intended to help you, and yet you're offended, then that's the meaning of my communication. I offended you. Why would I spend time defending my intention when I could just accept that I offended you and then spend time making or communicating in such a way that helps you respond in a way that's in accordance with my intention? So don't spend time defending your intentions when what you said didn't work. Accept that the meaning of your communication is the response that you get. If you'd like to learn more NLP tips and strategies, come to INLPcenter.com. We have a free mini course for you. It's INLPcenter.com. Hope to see you there.
Have you been receiving your free issue of Alms Times magazine in your email box? Every 2 weeks, you'll receive this top quality magazine that has spiritual, metaphysical, and scientific information that will rock your world. Go to almstimes.com, OMTIMES.com, to sign up for your free subscription today.
You are listening to your daily dose of well-being and inspiration on Law of Attraction Radio Network at LOARadionetwork.com. Hear this incredible show on your smartphone through Stitcher.com, which goes through your car stereos with Ford Sync or any auto dashboard that has the internet. Listen to our 24/7 broadcast with our mobile app as well, or just listen through an MP3 player or computer. Remember, LOARadionetwork.com, heard in over 120 countries, is the radio station for your well-being.
Okay, we are back. Hey, how has the month of October been for you? You know, we're at the halfway point in October 2011, and it's been quite interesting, hasn't it? I know we talked a lot in detail about it astrology-wise last week, but let's talk more on the emotional side for us, because I have a feeling a lot of people started off at the month of October going in kind of a set direction. I already knew where they were going, but by the middle of the month, there's been a couple of turns and a little bit of changes. And with those changes, the feeling of, oh my gosh, am I doing the right thing? Or a little bit of fear cropping up or overwhelmment. Am I going to get all this done? But yet, at the same time, it's kind of like you can see the end of the tunnel. The light is starting to come through, and it's like, okay. And everything is happening so fast, and it has to do with the shift and the end of the Mayan calendar, as told to us by Carl Kalman. You know, it's really fascinating, all of these emotions that crop up. And look what's happening with all of these groups of people of collective consciousness. We have the Occupy people whose focus is on anger. They're angry about everything. every different thing that they could think of, they are focused in on that. They're not happy with the way things are going. We've got the Tea Partiers who are, again, focusing mostly on the financials and holding people accountable, but at the same time, they're angry too. So what happens with all of this? Because people are coming together in anger. Well, here's what separates the Occupy people, the Tea Party, from the Law of Attraction practitioners. One, we know that we create our reality. So if we go and get angry, we're simply going to be creating more anger. If we go from a point of wanting peace and knowing that we are powerful, that we can create anything and everything, then we are in a better place to do this collectively. So I really see us three sets of people. We've got the anger, we got the stronger action, and then we've got the Law of Attraction spiritual people who understand how powerful we are. So perhaps what we need to be focusing in on right now is not so much that there's a war, but we need to be focusing in on creating more peace. We need to be focusing in not so much on how terrible the government is, but focusing in on what the government is doing right so that we can build a better government from there. Focusing in on not so much the lack of jobs, but the ability for people to create their own abundance, for them to understand that our universe is incredibly abundant. It has everything that we could possibly need. You know, if something happened to the money and we no longer had it, we would still be able to survive. Believe it or not, we wouldn't die and we wouldn't perish if money ceased to exist. We would simply be creative enough to find another way of living without money. That's the whole thing. How do you want to create your future? And that's what Carl Coleman and the Mayan experts are all saying. Now is the time to create so that you can see the fruitation or the fruits of everything of what you want to manifest start occurring in November, December, and all the way through 2012. Carl Coleman was saying, don't wait until 2012. Now is the time to start creating your reality. And you want to do that from a very happy place. So get in your happy vortex. Feel good. Feel grateful. But start creating. Now, just don't create for you. Start creating collective consciously for everyone. Right now, we need to be focusing on freedom, the freedom to be who we are, the freedom to create what we want, the freedom to recognize how powerful we are. That's how that we can all change the world. And now is the time. So use this month because it is a fantastic month. Use it. Create and become happy, and then let the ripple go out from there. It's the place where we all want to be. And I know that you're listening right now, and I know that you're resonating with what I'm saying, because it's up to us to counterbalance some of this anger that's being directed out there. And we can do that by just feeling good. Get to that place. No matter what's going on, feel good. Okay, so that's our assignment for the rest of the month, just to feel good. That's a pretty easy assignment. So let's get on with tonight's show. I want to tell you about David Stanley. You know, he's written so many incredible books, but he's here tonight to talk about one book, Conversations with the King, Journals of a Young Apprentice. You see, he was taught and mentored by Elvis. and actually worked for Elvis as his bodyguard and doing a lot of other things. So you're going to love what he has to say. On top of that, David Stanley has a really wonderful message that I think everybody needs to hear. So let's go and talk with David. Well, welcome, David, to the Law of Attraction Talk Radio. I'm delighted that you could be with us, and I'm so anxious to ask you questions.
Well, Jules, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure being with you this morning.
So let's get down to basics. I never really realized that Elvis had a stepbrother.
Well, he did, and the way it happened, it began in 1960, actually. My mom and dad, actually, I'll just start from the beginning. In 1958, my mom and dad was in Germany. My father was military, and my mother and father was having some problems, and they were going through a separation. Well, at the same time in 58, Elvis Presley was there,
right,
serving his country. He was 2 years in Germany, and along with him was his father, Vernon, who was recently widowed. Well, my mother ran into Vernon one night just out of fate. They met, fell in love. Went back to Memphis, got married. Unfortunately, my father and mother divorced, and my mother married Vernon. Unfortunately for him, fortunately for me, I guess, because I went from Germany to the Graceland Mansion in 1960. I moved in when I was 4 years old. I didn't know what an Elvis Presley was. My two older brothers walked in the house, and it was a big, beautiful home, and this was the beginning of a very unusual life. There stood Elvis Presley, 25. He picked me up. He gave me a hug. He welcomed me into his family. I think he understood that I had just come from a broken home. And he was sympathetic, and he just welcomed my two older brothers and myself in. And this was the beginning of a very unusual life.
Unusual, but wow, what a blessing. It had to have been very spectacular.
Well, Jules, I didn't really have anything to compare it to. Like I said, my parents divorced. I did miss my dad. I was confused. I didn't know what a hound dog was. I didn't know what an Elvis Presley was. But here was this guy, like I said, who picked me up, and he gave me a hug. He welcomed me into his family. And from that time on, it was the beginning of an unusual lifestyle. For 17 years, I lived at the Graceland Mansion. I looked at Elvis Presley as not only big brother, but friend, mentor, spiritual advisor. Later, he became my boss. I began touring with Elvis in 1972. I dropped out of school after my 10th grade year and went to work for Elvis as a personal aide and traveled with him from 72 to 77, hundreds of concerts throughout the United States. It was a great life, a wonderful life. But when people say, what was it like? When you're four, you don't get it.
Yeah.
You think everybody's a singer. You think everybody's a movie star. Obviously, historically, looking back, Elvis was, you know, the undisputed king of rock and roll. And fortunately, I was part of his life and was able to share 17 years of that life with him, all the way up until the fateful day when, unfortunately, I was amongst the first to discover his lifeless body.
Mm. Oh, that had to have been very traumatic. But before we get into that, let's talk about this, Elvis Presley has never been far from our minds. Why is that?
I think Elvis is, first and foremost, he was an entertainer. Unquestionably, the undisputed king of rock and roll, like I said a moment ago. But Elvis was much more than that. You know, what made Elvis Elvis? What people don't know about Elvis Presley, he was a highly spiritually evolved individual. He had the gift. He had the it factor. When Elvis would come out on a stage, it was electric. The magnetism and the charisma that this man projected was second to none. And, you know, as I look back those years, 34 years ago when he passed away, in the years since his death, I've seen a lot of entertainers come and I've seen them go. And this sounds like a proud little brother or younger brother, but this is a guy, David Stanley, who saw hundreds of, did about 800 concerts with Elvis. And
Wow. The
appeal, of every show, every time we were in a concert, it was mass hysteria. People were drawn to him. They wanted to hear his music. They wanted to see him. But more than that, when he came out, he brought that charisma, that magnetism, and that spirituality. I think that these were all gifts from God to communicate his message through the structure of song. And that was the Elvis that the world saw. That was the sanitized public image of Elvis Presley. Then there was the dark side that unfortunately, eventually, Elvis made some decisions that cost him his life, much like what we're seeing with Michael Jackson on the news today.
Mm-hmm.
Then there was that spiritual, authentic self, the man who was in tune with God. I mean, Elvis Presley, a little known fact about Elvis Presley, he was a mystic. He was a healer. I mean, here was a guy that moved clouds. Here was a guy that made rain. Here was a guy that laid hands on people, and there would be physical healings. Elvis was one of those special dudes, one of those guys that was handpicked by God. And in my book, Conversations with the King, Journals of a Young Apprentice, that's what the book is about, the authentic spiritual king of rock and roll. No, the authentic spiritual human being that Elvis Presley really was, and the messages that I got from him that I'm communicating within the pages of my new book.
Wow, how fascinating. How did, and he was your mentor. He really was teaching you and counseling you as well. So he must have had this tremendous vibration about him. His energy must have been...
Well, you know, Jules, I think you hit it right on the spot. It was a very powerful energy. It was a vibration. You know, as a kid, we used to lay by the pool in Graceland, Memphis, Tennessee. You know, millions have been there. When I talk about this house, I was just there this summer with my fiance, soon to be my wife. In 3 weeks, I'm getting married.
Congratulations.
And I'm excited. But I took her and her little girl there, and we went through Graceland. And, you know, to see millions of people go through this house is so odd. I grew up there. But I guess what I'm trying to say, at Graceland, we would lay out by the pool as a child, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old. And I remember we'd lay out and it'd be cloudy and I'd say, Elvis, we're not going to get any sun. And he'd just lift his hand and say, sure we are. And he would move his hand and the clouds would move. Now, people listening to my voice say, David, you might have lost it. Listen, I believe the Spirit of God moves in mighty ways. And I believe that Elvis had that gift. The clouds moved and I just sat there. But Jules, the amazing thing about it, such vibration, such energy that I never questioned it. This is the way I was raised. And it'd be hot. He'd make the wind blow. He'd move his hand, the wind would blow. And people are going, David, are you sure? I was with him 17 years. I didn't touch the cloth of the king. I was raised in rock and roll's first family. I was raised by this guy. And he would sit down and talk about the gifts. He would say, God has given me a gift. I have the gift of prophecy. He felt he was a mystic. At any given time next to Elvis's bed, there were literally dozens and dozens of books on spirituality, on healing, on prophecy. He had the prophet. He read the impersonal life. Obviously, he read his Bible. He was a believer in Christ, but he believed when Christ said, you'll do these things and more. I'm the same today, tomorrow, and forever. Elvis embraced that, and I believe that that was the true gift of Elvis Presley and what the people were drawn to in his concerts, in his films, that purity, that energy. And again, Jules, what you so cleverly said, that vibration. He had it. He had it all.
He had it all. Wow. And a magnificent manifester, because he really started out with nothing and created. That's amazing. And this show is all about the law of attraction. Well, I think he knew about that intuitively because he knew how to create.
He did. The thing is, he knew he had a gift from God, which is the beginning of a manifestation. That's,
right.
The law of attraction. And he just was very simple in being still and letting God move. And when God moved in his life, the Spirit moved, whatever you want to call it. When it moved in his life, he responded. He wanted to sing. He wanted to make people happy. He wanted to communicate his message within the structure of song. And he did all of those things. And Elvis, you know, we're talking about the first. He was a prototype. He was the first superstar.
Yeah.
You got Bing Crosby, you got Frank Sinatra, then you have Hound Dog, Blue Suede Shoes, and Jailhouse Rock. I mean, this guy burst onto the scene and rattled the cages of the world.
Right.
People wanted to be like him, sing like him, look like him. Even to this day, 34 years after his death, millions of people are still drawn to him. And he had it, Jules, you're right. The law of attraction was working. He knew he had the gift. He wanted to expound on it. He wanted to perpetuate it. He brought it in, and that gift manifested, and we were all the beneficiaries as a result.
You're right, we were, and I'm extremely grateful. What I want to know is the demons that he had, because, again, on the opposite side of the law of attraction, he created all of the contrast in his life, the downside. So let's talk about that.
Well, Jules, I appreciate you bringing that to our attention. I appreciate you wanting to talk about that, because there are the three selves of all of us, and Elvis had them as well. The sanitized public image, the Elvis that doesn't cuss, smoke, drink, chew, liar, lust, loved his mother, went to the service, bought Graceland, all of his movies were clean, all of his songs were great, right? That's
yes.
The sanitized self. We all have that. Then we have that dark, private self, that behind the closed doors, the thing that creates the fear, the self-destructiveness, the thing that causes us to go in a direction we know better than to go into, but somehow we wind up doing it. Then we have the authentic, you know, that spiritual authentic self. And Elvis had all three. Conversations with the King, Journals of the Young Apprentice, deals with those three selves. That dark side, why? Jules, I'm glad you asked. Elvis had such charisma, as I said. Elvis had such magnetism, so many gifts. He couldn't understand where they came from. He knew God gave them. Maybe not where they came from, it's not the right term, but why him? Why did Elvis Presley, perhaps one of the most influential men of the 20th century, have so much? You know, he was poor. He lost a brother at birth. His twin brother died at birth. His mom died early in his career. You know, he had a lot of things happening to him, but yet he was always blessed with this enormous gift. He could not make a mistake. Everything he touched turned to gold. Every time he looked out a window, 10,000 people were looking back, and it was hard for him to embrace that. And as a result, he isolated and consistently asked the why me question, to the point to where that turned into a self-destructive situation. Medications went from use to abuse, much like we're seeing with the Michael Jackson case.
Right.
Michael had it all, but went into a self-dark side that ultimately cost him his life. I believe Elvis just had a hard time handling the greatness that he had, the celebrity that he had, and he went so in that there was no other place to go. He felt like he didn't deserve it. At times he felt fearful. He felt that he wasn't worthy. That's what the dark side will do to you, that dark self. It creates that fear. And unfortunately, Elvis succumbed to it and got involved in medications from use to abuse that ultimately cost him his life. That doesn't take away the greatness.
Right.
Elvis's death is a reminder that we're all human and we're all capable of falling into that dark side and living in that fear and that self-destructive ideology. But, you know, the message of Conversations with the King, Journals of the Young Apprentice, is to step out of that fear, to step out of that self-destructiveness, to live a life of transparency and let the light illuminate on your life and that mercy and grace and move forward. You know, I'm 56 years old. If I could talk to Elvis now, I was only 22 when he died. I would try to communicate that with him. But his death and his life was a reminder that we're all human and capable of falling into that side that can cost us our lives. Authenticity, illuminating the light of God in your life through transparency, embodying the greatness of the authentic self, is where it's at. That's the message that Elvis instilled in his young apprentice, his young stepbrother David Stanley, who's now an author and a speaker, communicating the message to the world.
Yes, and look what you've created. You have been all over. I mean, I'm very impressed by you, and your books are wonderful. So you've written not just this book, but many other books about Elvis.
Well, the thing is, Jules, a lot of people ask me. I'm a historian. I mean, you know, I'm a guy who lived with the most influential rock icon ever. I'm humbled by it. He was just a person. He was just a human. He had incredible gifts. But after Elvis died, you know, I wrote a book with my family called Elvis, We Love You Tender, Our Family Memoirs. People want to know about Elvis. I wrote another book called Life with Elvis, Raised on Rock, about my life with Elvis. And, you know, I talk a lot about Elvis and a lot of things that I learned. But Conversations with the King is the first book that indulges into the mystic, the spiritual, the healer, the prophet that Elvis was, the true message that I picked up along the way. I am blessed to be able to have such a very powerful subject. Mm. Some people say, well, David, you're such an author, such an awesome writer. I have a great subject. You know, I know people care about the influence that Elvis had on the world. And I've always tried to use my books and anything I've written about him or documentaries or films to communicate the positive. We talked about the dark side that cost him his life. I did a film called Protecting the King about my life with him and how it almost cost me my life. I protected the King from everyone but himself. And through that, I try to communicate with young people, hey, the dangers of these decisions can cost you your life. In my books, I talk about, you know, what happened to him and how he passed away so early. Again, communicating, hey, wake up. This can happen to you. And now I'm more excited about this book than anything I've done, because now we're indulging into that spiritual side, illuminating the greatness of God's love, God's mercy, God's grace. I've been blessed, Jules, and I just want to spend the rest of my life on the platform, communicating and telling people to embody the greatness of the authentic self.
Well, I appreciate what you are doing because you are keeping Elvis alive for us, and I truly appreciate that. Let's talk about his healing, though, and you said laying of hands. Can you give us a situation or an experience?
I can. We had a house in Vail, Colorado in 75, 76. We were up there skiing. But we weren't really skiers. We were snowmobilers. We would get on snowmobiles and go down the mountains and on the moguls at 60 and 70 miles an hour. Very dangerous, but fun. But we, one night we were out snowmobiling, and one of the guys that worked for Elvis came off the snowmobile, hit a ski divider, broke his leg. And Jules, it was ugly. It was a fracture. The bone sticking out. Blood was pouring out. And he was in horrible pain. It was 3 o'clock in the morning. All you could hear in the night was his voice of screaming in pain. Elvis just gets off his snowmobile, calmly walks over, asks us to step back, and we did. And he got down and rubbed his hands and prayed. And he put his hands on the boy's legs. And suddenly the boy just jumped up. No blood, no fracture. The leg was healed.
Wow.
And like nothing happened. And, you know, when I looked at Elvis, like, wow, Elvis, that's incredible. He said, David, Jesus says you will do things that he did and more. He's the same today, tomorrow, and forever. Elvis was brought up Assembly of God, uh-huh, Pentecostal. They believe in laying on of hands. Elvis took it literally. His little boy faith never questioned that if it's said, it can be done. And the simplicity of receiving that is what made Elvis so great. He didn't question it. He just said, well, this is a gift from God. And the guy just jumped up, and we were just amazed. And Elvis was not only a physical healer. Elvis was a healer within the structure of his music. You go to an Elvis concert, he does gospel music. You could feel the spirit of God in that room, the healing touch of music, the healing touch of song. I mean, Elvis, I got to give it to him. He never did anything to tear down the establishment, anti-God, anti-Christian. All of his lyrics were pure. They were uplifting, always positive. So not only a physical healer, but a verbal musician, musical healer within the structure of song. He really had the gift, Jules. He was a great person.
Wow.
You know, obviously a great entertainer. But as a human being, you know, I really want people to see the human being and the greatness of Elvis Presley through the pages of my book. That's what I'm most excited about.
Yes, that's wonderful. So tell us about his psychicness. I mean, he was able to see
Elvis, the laws of attraction. If he saw it, he did it. It was brought to him. And when he would sit down with me and say, David, close your eyes. And his favorite book was The Impersonal Life. And the theme of the book is Be Still and Know That I Am God. And we would sit down, be still and know that I am God. We would meditate, and we would ask for certain things. You know, I need this, that, or the other. Lord, bless me with this, that, or the other. And it is the purest form of the law of attraction. You know, putting it out there in the universe. And we would meditate on it. And he would say, David, just let's meditate on it. Let's seek wisdom. And I would get it. And he would say, you will get it before. So it was prophecy. It was seeing out in the future, but it was the purest case of manifestation, the law of attraction. I mean, I think Elvis invented it. Because I see it all over now, the secret of the law of attraction. And I grew up that way. You know, we'd sit down and go, you know, I really feel about a situation. Well, let's meditate on it. Let's manifest it. Let's make it a reality. Mm. And so those were the carrots that I picked up from the king. And that's why, you know, I teach now. You know, I was an old rock and roller. Now I'm a 56-year-old mystic sharing the good news. If you seek, you will find. If you knock, the door will be answered. You know, that law of attraction is so great and so true. Through meditation and seeking, all things are possible.
Wow. So he believed that he had the essence of God, as everybody has the essence of God. So he was teaching people that they could do that. He could.
Yes, he was. And the thing is he, you know, be still and know that I am God. I always believe that God lived in each and every one of us. I believe that. I believe we should all embrace that. I mean, no matter who we are, black, white, freak, geek, you know, Hebrew, Muhammad, Buddha, Hindu. I mean, just we could go through the list. God is in all of us in one form or another. And I think that Elvis realized that just tapping into that source, just tapping into by being still and knowing and meditating and seeking that he or she would answer, you know, I refer to God, in his or, own, or her way. And he wanted everybody to know that. And now Elvis was Christian. He believed that Christ was the Son of God. But Elvis was also very much, you know, seeking all faiths, all denominations, all religions,
really?
And recognizing the fact that God is the center of that universe and all of our faiths. And he was very universal in that and communicated that love to all who sought after. There was no prejudice. There was no one right or wrong. There was God. There was love. There was the illuminated light. And Elvis communicated that and perpetuated that within the structure of his music and his life as much as possible.
You know, we know that Elvis was very generous, very generous. And
yes.
To me, that spoke of he knew about prosperity consciousness.
Yes, he did. I mean, Elvis, if he wanted something, he got it. And he always gave glory to God for it. He was always encouraging, if you really seek after something, he was very visual, meditate on it, close your eyes and see it. And obviously, Elvis knew something about prosperity. In the monetary way, but he also did in his personal life. Unfortunately, that dark side got so diluted that the illuminated light could not go in any deeper. And the reason was, now a lot of people say, why?
Yeah.
Elvis just was not transparent. He was so private. He was afraid his fans would think, well, gosh, if they find out I have a problem, they may turn on me. If they find out that I'm less than the perfect image that's been depicted of me, they may think less of me. So he lived in that constant fear. And unfortunately, he was unable to get out of that. I know that Elvis had prosperity mindset. I just wish that he had had prosperity through transparency and let the world love him even more and know him even more. I believe if Elvis Presley would have woke up one day and said, I got a problem, pray for me, I've got a medication problem, help me, goodness gracious, if it's even possible to be loved even more than he is today, I believe it would have been possible. I think Elvis just needed to reach out and let someone touch him. He was always touching. But, you know, a lot of times the great ones don't let them in. They're always giving it out.
Right.
And that's what happens to
them. Exactly. Always giving it out. And that's what I kind of meant by prosperity consciousness, because he would give so much to everyone else, material things, and then it has to come back to you because you're establishing the flow. And I think he knew that.
Well, he did. I mean, you know, you reap what you sow. You can't outgive God. I mean, Elvis gave millions to charity. The stories of giving cars away, that was a norm. I mean, we were in Memphis, and Elvis was looking at a new car. And we were downtown, and there was a lady, a black lady, looking through the window. And all she had was a shopping cart and the clothes that was on her back. I mean, she was really, it was sad. And Elvis looked up and saw her and said, go get her, David. And I walked out there, and I got the lady, and he just gave her the keys to a car.
Wow.
And she was just shaking. Well, she so happened to be married, and her husband had just lost his job. Well, Elvis gave the husband a job.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, her son made good grades in school, good enough to go to college, but there's no way they could have ever afforded that. He put the kid in college, bought the guy and the wife, the husband, all of them, bought him a home, gave him a car, gave him a job, put the kid in college, all in just a matter of days. And I just looked at him. He changed that person's life. Just by giving. I said, why, boss? I called him boss. He said, look at their faces. All they need is somebody to love them. All they need is somebody to embrace them. All they need is somebody to believe in them. And he just gave and gave and gave. And that was Elvis's mindset all the time. Again, Jules, unable to receive, but certainly knew how to give.
Wow, that's amazing. I love this. Now, did he know that he was going to die? Did he have any insight? I mean, did he talk about death to you?
Well, it's interesting you said that. My last conversation with Elvis was, is the first conversation in my book. On the 14th of August, I was going out of town up to Nashville, it was in Memphis, for a day or so, before we left on the 16th to start yet another concert tour. And I walked in Elvis's room, and he was sitting on the bed, and he was reading his Bible, and next to him, all of his other books. I'm telling you, Jules, there were books all over the bed, Elvis was a seeker. And he was reading, and I said, "Boss," and he held his hand up while he read. And I said, "Boss," and he held his hand up again, and he said, "David, who am I?" And I said, "Well, you're the king, boss, you're the king." And he held his Bible up and said, "No, there's only one king." He said, "Come over here and sit down and talk to me." And I sat and I talked with him for just over an hour about certain things, different things. And then I stood up and he stood up and he said, "David, I love you." He hugged me. I said, "Well, I love you too." He said, "I want you to know something. The next time you see me, I'll be on a different place, at a different place on a higher plane." And I just looked at him. And I looked around the room and I thought, well, he had obviously had read something and he was trying to communicate something to me. He said, "A higher place, a different plane." And I just broke the conversation by saying, "No, boss, I'll see you on your plane on the 16th. And he just smiled and he sat back down on the bed. And I started to walk out and I turned around and I said, "Boss," he said, "the 16th, David, the 16th. Well, 2 days later, I went up those steps again, went into his bedroom, into his bathroom, and he was dead. I mean, Elvis was gone. Others had walked in before me that worked for him, so I wasn't the first, but I was amongst the first to discover him. And I was angry, Jules. Did he say goodbye? It was 2 days before him saying goodbye. And I carried that for many, many years. You know, I was angry. Why did you leave like this? Did you check out? Did you take your own life? I even asked myself that question. And I've learned to come to understand that it was just time for him to go. And when Elvis said a higher place in a different plane, I believe Elvis was the young apprentice was now becoming the master. I think Elvis wanted me to continue his message that he had taught me and brought me up in this way. Now, it took 34 years, Jewel, before I really embraced it. I carried it. I always had this book in me. I always had this message in me that I put in the pages of Conversations with the King, but I just wasn't ready. But last March, I was in a business meeting. I'm a filmmaker. I'm working on a film project, my newest film project. And I was talking to a group of investors, and I was going to talk to them about getting involved in Father's Honor, which is the name of my new picture. And suddenly I leaned forward and I said, "I got an idea for a book. Conversations with the King, Journals of a Young Apprentice, about the spiritual Elvis, the healer, the mystic." Now, my fiance is an intuitive, and she and I had been talking about it. Her name's Katie, a walking angel. She said, "Someday you'll do it." Well, on that day in March of this year, I leaned forward and brought it to the attention of a group of people. "We'll fund it. Let's do it." Everything stops. 6 months later, we've been doing nothing but the book, and it comes out in December. Talking about manifestation, you're talking about, you know, law of attraction. I leaned forward. The book, right there, I saw the whole book.
Wow.
The funding for the book, we needed a certain amount. All the money came in quick, just like that. The Dr. David Grutter, the co-author, who's a doctor of psychology, who specializes in integrity. See, what killed Elvis was a lack of accountability. He didn't answer to anybody. Jules, we said he gave, but he wouldn't let people get back. He never let anybody in. And so I got with Dr. Grutter. We came up with a book outline. We just finished it about 3 weeks ago. Everybody's coming on board. The book is pre-selling as we speak. Countries are calling me up from Norway, Germany, France, Asia, pre-ordering the book. I believe we got a book here that's going to be a bestseller. I will sell 5, 6, 7 million copies. It's one of those books that it just came together, and I believe the spirit of Elvis and the gift of God, the young apprentice is now the teacher. I've got a message that I've learned and picked up from the road that's going out to the world through, fortunately, thank you for this interview, through people like you who allow me to communicate it, but it's going all over, and you're one of the first interviews I've done on this. I'm excited about this. Jewel, we're going to look back in about 4 or 5 months and say, "Remember that interview? Let's do it again, and let's talk about the results of Conversations with the King."
And as you said, the message, I think the message is so important, and it's so timely right now for people to understand what it could be happening in their lives. It's very, very important. It's a great message.
Well, thank you. I just think that we need to recognize our sanitized public image, what people see. The dark side, eliminate it, deal with the fears, the self-destructiveness and things that we do behind closed doors, and embrace the authenticity of the deep spiritual side, the authentic spiritual side. And, you know, we got to get out of this movement of attack and someone's right, someone's wrong. I'm tired of the Baptists picking on the intuitives and the intuitives picking on the Baptists and the whatever. We just got to get together. We've got to understand that God loves us all. All faiths, all denominations, all religions need to come together and understand that he loved the universe, whatever you want to call him or her. It doesn't matter. The law of God, the love of God, the illuminated life of God is on us all, and we just simply need to step into the authenticity. We need to embrace it. We need to embody it, and we're going to be a better society as a result of it.
Oh, gosh, this is wonderful. Please tell everyone how they can get your book. Right now, it's a pre-sale.
It is a pre-sale. We have limited editions, signed, numbered, limited editions.
Wow.
Exclusive limited editions. There's 10,000 copies being printed that are coming out in December. Pre-orders are at davidstanley.com, davidestanley.com, www.davidestanley.com. All the information on the book is there. The pre-order's there. They're going fast. They'll be shipped in December. Those books will be out the middle of December, just before Christmas. The official book launch in North America is in January. Elvis's birthday is January 8th. The week of January, we'll be doing all media from Piers Morgan to Good Morning America, all the top shows in the U.S. So if you want it before anybody else, davidestanley.com and do a pre-order on it. We're excited about it. Those books will come numbered. They'll be signed by myself and my co-author, Dr. David Gruder. We're very excited about it. Again, davidestanley.com is where all that information's at.
Oh, how wonderful. David, I can't thank you enough. This has been a real treat. You are fantastic. Thank
you. Thank you so much, Jill. Thank you. And anytime I can be with you, feel free to call me at any time. I love chatting with you.
Thank you, David. That's wonderful. And that's the end of the show. I wish we could go farther. But thank you. And to all my wonderful listeners out there, thank you so much. Go out and get his book. You're going to love it. And we'll talk to you all next week. Bye-bye.
As we close another show, it is my sincerest wish that you have a wonderful week ahead. Remember, through you, the world changes to reflect your happiness. If you'd like to comment on today's show, please send me an email to jules@loaradionetwork.com.